right, welcome back into Hawks Huddle, episode 18 here. If you're watching on YouTube, we would hope for you to drop a like and also subscribe. We are joined by a special guest on the show today, longtime NFL writer Jim Trotter. He's worked for several outlets. He's now working with the NFL Network and co-host of the Huddle and Flow podcast with Steve Wyche. How you doing, Jim?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing?
We're great.
Thank you so much for coming on. I know this isn't really football related, but have you made a March Madness bracket?
No, you know, I haven't actually. Honestly speaking, this has been one of the weirdest sports years for me. It's been hard to get into things because of the pandemic and everything that's going on. So I'll be 100% honest with you. I didn't even know we were having a March Madness tournament this year.
Really?
Until after the brackets were announced and people were talking about them. So
okay.
It's been hard for me to get into to sports without fans, if that makes any sense.
Oh, I 100% agree. Football I was able to get into, but basketball and hockey, I can't watch. March Madness, I can't just because of my bracket, but like I'm a Raptors fan, and I'm not even watching them. It's so hard to just get into sports. But March Madness for sure is something I have been watching, but I do understand not really seeing that it's on now just because things are getting pushed back. And well, football was good, but everything else kind of got pushed back. But I do want to get into some football talk now. Do you ever get bored of talking about football all day? I asked the same question to your co-host, Steve. I'm wondering what you think.
I mean, you have moments where it's like, how many times can I say the same thing and no one seems to be hearing me? So yeah, you have those moments, but for the most part, I understand it. There's such an insatiable appetite for the NFL and everything NFL related that it makes sense. And look, at the end of the day, I always remind myself too, I'm being paid to talk about a sport that I love. So even though I may be saying it for the fourth or fifth time or more in a given day, it's all right. You know, it pays the bills and I could be doing something a lot more strenuous, if you will. So it's all good. I don't have any complaints.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I think one guy that to continue this football conversation, one guy who you've probably been repeating out of your mouth over the past couple months is Deshaun Watson. I know on the podcast with Steve Wyche, you guys made some news when Jalen Ramsey was on it and had said that Deshaun still has the intentions of leaving Houston. Again, you've been on NFL Network a lot this week. We've been hearing you, Jim, but how do you see that Texans scenario with Deshaun right now?
Well, for me, I based on the things that you're hearing and people are saying, I've felt for some time that he will not return to Houston. And, you know, number one, it starts with his conviction about not wanting to be there. Number two, then you have his close friend, Jalen Ramsey, was represented by the same agent coming on our show and saying he doesn't ever see Deshaun putting on a Houston Texan uniform again and saying that he's extremely serious about that. And then number three, having the Texans head coach David Culley on and having him qualify his answer when we ask, will Deshaun Watson be your opening day starter? And he said, as of right now, he is our starting quarterback. Right. And then later saying, we want guys who are all in moving forward. We're moving forward and we want guys who are all in. And we all know Deshaun Watson is not all in. So when you start piecing all that together, it says to me that a breakup is coming. And I don't think that the things that are going on now and the allegations that are being made are going to make it any easier for that relationship to be resolved.
No, of course. Do you envision, because there's a lot of talk about the quarterback movements when we were entering this offseason. We did have the Stafford trade a little bit earlier. Do you envision, I know it's hard to ask, but a trade with Watson or maybe Sam Darnold or one of these quarterbacks before the draft or as things heat up towards the draft?
I can definitely, out of all those scenarios, I would say I could see Sam Darnold being moved. I don't think it's any secret that the Jets really like the Wilson kid a lot. Right. And they've had conversations with different teams gauging their interest in Sam Darnold. So out of all the things that you've mentioned, if there were one quarterback, I would say who's likely to still be moved, it's Sam Darnold. Why? Number one, there are those who believe he does have the talent to be successful. Number two, he's still on a rookie contract, which makes a big deal.
Right.
He's not one of these veterans that's been paid a lot of money. So so I believe that he's the one that will ultimately be moved.
So Mark did mention the Ramsey interview. Your podcast has been doing very, very well. What was the inspiration of you and Steve starting that podcast?
You know, it's funny. When I first joined the NFL Network back in 2018, Steve and I went to management and asked about doing a podcast that we felt would be representative of who we are and what we're about. And we're both Howard University graduates. You know, we come from an HBCU, Black Men in America, Black men covering the NFL. And we felt that we wanted to talk about the league from our perspective. And basically, the pitch that we made died on a vine. It never got anywhere. And then 2 years later, in the summer of George Floyd, where all of a sudden everyone was quote unquote woke, and everyone wanted to appear as if they were sensitive to the concerns of the Black community, management came back to us and said, hey, remember that podcast you guys brought up 2 years ago? Are you still interested in doing it? And so we went forward with it. And I say this, and maybe I'm wrong, but it's my own opinion. I think initially, 2 years earlier, they didn't believe that there was a market for it or there was an interest in it. And I think hopefully what they have seen since then is that there is a market for it, that there is interest in it, and that it's good business to be able to speak about the league from so many different perspectives. And Steve and I have been doing it long enough where we're not just going to go on there and gratuitously say things or whatnot. Anything that we speak about is going to be based on our experiences, both as a journalist and as human beings. And we've tried to uphold that standard.
Right, right. I do want to talk about Howard University. So you graduated the same year as Kamala Harris, right?
Yes, ma'am. Yes.
So, but you did not know her, right? You just she was a class.
I didn't know. Yes, I didn't know her personally, but I can only wonder if I passed her on the yard at some point. You know, it's a big school, but it's not a big school, if that makes sense. Yeah, so, right. So I like to pretend like, yeah, we bumped elbows or that sort of thing as we were up there. But no, I don't know her personally.
How amazing is it though to see, you know, a fellow classmate become a vice president, especially in, you know, in the times today.
You know, the thing is, when you attend Howard, so many greats have come through there in all facets of life, whether we're talking entertainment, whether we're talking law, whether we're talking politics, whether we're talking sports. I mean, it doesn't matter. You know, when I think about when you go there and you think about Thurgood Marshall, the first Black Supreme Court justice came through Howard Law School. When you talk about the entertainment industry, and there are so many I could mention, but I get in trouble for leaving some off. Mm-hmm. It's just incredible. And so that's one of the things you feel when you're at Howard. There is this standard there that you feel, and sometimes it's spoken, but more than anything, I think it's just sort of implicit that greatness is expected of you, that, you know, you're supposed to do well, almost you're required to do well. And I think about our sports journalism program, I'll stack it up against anyone. I shouldn't say sports journalism, I should just say journalism, because I know there are schools that have great journalism programs, whether you're talking Syracuse or you're talking Missouri or those sorts of places. But when I think about the people that we put out in the industry, you know, whether it's, you know, Steve Weiss, whether it's Gus Johnson, whether it's D. Orlando Ledbetter, you know, and I could keep going down the list, just so many. I'm proud of what we do and what we've accomplished. And I know that there are so many more who are coming behind us.
Yeah, no, for sure. And the same sort of thing we mentioned to Steve, you and Steve have done a great job of spotlighting maybe some of the conversations that there weren't a market for, like you said, or that didn't want to be had. And you've been a storyteller as well, Jim. Was there a story throughout your years, whether it be with Sports Illustrated or NFL.com, was there one that really is memorable working on? I know you've talked about Colin Kaepernick. You've talked about, you reported on Sean Taylor. Was there one that really stood out?
Yeah, I mean, those two definitely stand out, in particular Sean Taylor, because we're talking about a young man whose life was taken from him, and people were so quick to jump to conclusions without really knowing the man and how he had evolved. But, you know, there are also lesser, I shouldn't say lesser, but there are stories that did not get as much traction that for me were just as important or just as gratifying. And for instance, when I was working at the San Diego Union, and I was able to go out with the teams, I was covering the Chargers at the time, and their director of security at that time, his name is Dick Lewis. He would go out every, I can't remember if it was Tuesday or Thursday night, and he would feed the homeless. You know, he would just find them in the community. He would go around in a van. They would make sandwiches and other things at the facility. And then he and some players and team employees would go out once a week and around town, and they would just find homeless and feed them. And to go out on that story with them, to shadow them on that and see the impact that they were having in that way is a kind of story that just resonated and stays with me. So, so it's hard to put, you know, one above the other. I know that people get caught up into breaking news and, you know, breaking stories and how those are big. And they think that that somehow, as a journalist, that defines you. I don't consider that defining me. It's just more of those stories that really resonate with me as a human being that kind of stay with me, because we're all expected to break news. You know, that's part of the job when you get into it.
So you had a great relationship with Junior Seau. What kind of impact did he make on you as, you know, a journalist and working in sports?
Oh, a huge one. I always say I wouldn't be where I am today without him, because when I had never covered an NFL team before I was assigned the Chargers beat. And I spent 1 year as a backup before becoming the primary beat writer. And I never forget the first time I walked in a Chargers locker room. It was the off season. And their locker room at that time was still at the stadium, the former Jack Murphy Stadium. And there were only two people in there when I walked in across the room, and one was Junior, and there was another player, and Junior was walking towards the training room. And he turns around and he sees me and he calls me over and he introduces himself. He says, first, you know, hey, are you the new guy? And I'm like, yeah, you know, and say my name. He goes, well, you know, hi, I'm Junior Seau, as if I didn't know who he was. Right. And so we talk for a minute. And then before we broke, he says, look, if you ever need anything, you call me. And he said, take my number. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, I'm being punked right here. Something's going on. And so it was like, I'm not going to call this number right away. You know, so I waited a couple of weeks, and there was something minor that happened. And I said, okay, I'm going to call him and see. And I'm expecting like to get Domino's pizza or something, you know? And so when it rings. And when it picks up, it's voicemail and it's him. And I was like, wow, this guy's really real. And, you know, so I left a message and he called me back shortly. And that's when I knew what he was really about. And the interesting thing is, people thought because of our relationship that he fed me a lot of stories. And the reality is, he never fed me anything. He was so protective of the team that he was not going to do anything to violate that trust that the players in the organization had, and in particular that locker room. Where he was instrumental in my development is, he taught me the culture of a locker room, and he taught me the culture of an NFL, of the NFL. So for instance, there was 1 year the Chargers signed a big money free agent cornerback. His name was Ryan McNeil. And we get to training camp and Ryan McNeil just looks awful. I mean, he's being beaten on various routes and everything else. And I'm watching it and I'm going, man, they made a mistake. They blew this. And so I'm getting ready to write a story saying they just missed on this one. And I go and I talk to Junior, because he's the leader of the team, obviously, and whatnot. And again, this is where he educated me. And he said, you have to understand, veteran players work on their weaknesses in training camp. They're not out there to look good. You know, they want to try and get better at the things they don't do well. So by the time they get to the season, they're more effective. Well, Ryan McNeil went out and led the NFL in interceptions that year. So imagine how silly I would have looked if I had written that story and then he goes out and leads the league in interceptions. Those are the kind of things that Junior really helped me with, And it's just been invaluable throughout my career.
Yeah, because and Jim, you wrote the book Life and Death of a Football Icon a few years back. I think that's what a lot of people know about Junior, him, his on-field, how good of a football player he was, but they don't know how great of a guy he was, like you're saying there. When he was inducted into the Hall of Fame a few years ago, and obviously you are a Hall of Fame voter yourself, Jim, how did you think of that whole process with his family being barred to speak from that and such?
Yeah, you know, what's interesting is that story was misrepresented. They weren't barred from speaking. And I know a lot of people thought that. What happened was, and I don't remember how many years earlier, but some years earlier, however many it was, 2, 3 or more, what happened is that the speeches were getting so long that they were disrupting the TV broadcast. And so there was one year, I believe, that Carl Peterson of the Chiefs spoke for like 45 minutes in doing a presentation. And so, you know, television is very regimented in terms of you've got to hit these time spots. Mm-hmm. And so what the Hall of Fame came away with is they said, we are going to do away with speeches and or live speeches, and we will do recorded speeches, and that way we can control just how long they are. And that had been going on before Junior was ever inducted. And so some people took that to mean when he came up that they were trying to bar the family from speaking because they were concerned that CTE would be brought up and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And the reality was it had nothing to do with it. It was the same for everyone, that there was a finite amount of time now that you were allowed to speak. And I felt bad for the Hall of Fame because I, you know, knowing the people there, that's not what they were attempting to do at all. And it was just unfortunate that that became the narrative.
Right. I wanted to bring up, I read somewhere that you were co-authoring a book with Larry Fitzgerald. That's true, right? That you it are doing true. This? Do you know
it's
when
this true is going to... It's true and it's not true. It's true and it's not true, if that makes sense. We spent over 3 years working on the book, and the book was supposed to publish when Larry was done playing. Well, Larry seems like he's never going to stop playing.
Yeah. Right.
And so, and people don't know this, so you guys will be the first to have it. Okay. Larry has ultimately decided not to publish now, because he feels like he just has so much more living to do and so much more to tell that he thinks it's just too early to do it. So basically 3 years of work, 3 to 4 years of work has been put on hold until, you know, Larry moves on with the next part of his life and does some of the things that I think people will be very impressed with.
Wow.
So yeah, so you guys are the first to know publicly.
Awesome. Thank you. I guess if he is holding on, there's going to be a lot more chapters coming, because like, who knows now, even with the Cardinals, maybe a Super Bowl or maybe just more life experiences, of course. But how did this duo even happen?
You know, it's interesting how life works. And I always tell young journalists that relationships are what this business is all about, and your integrity and how you conduct yourself. So back in 2008, the Cardinals were just one of those teams nobody paid attention to. And I was working at Sports Illustrated at the time, and they, being on the West Coast, they sent me to Arizona and said, let's do a story about are Larry Fitzgerald and Anquan Boldin the best receiving tandem in NFL history? So I went out to Arizona to do a story on them and, you know, talk to both of them and the organization and whatnot. And it was the first time I'd really gotten to know Larry or really speak to him in depth. Well, fast forward, the Cardinals are good that year, surprising everyone. And they get to the playoffs and they're coming off an embarrassing loss to New England in the final and the regular season finale. And so I think SI thought, they're going to be one and done. So they're like, Jim, why don't you cover the Cardinals? Basically, I'm low man on the totem pole. All right. So I'm like, okay. And the Cardinals end up winning the opener. And then they say, well, just stay with them next week, because the thinking is they'll lose again. I'm like, okay. And they win again, and down in Carolina. And then they're like, well, I guess you've been with them 2 weeks. You might as well stay with them again. So I'm with them again, and they beat Philadelphia in the NFC Championship game. And then obviously we're at the Super Bowl. So spending so much time around them, you start to develop that relationship. Well, the season ends. Larry has this great Super Bowl. And they said, hey, we want you to do a profile of Larry in the off season. So I'm like, all right. So I go out to his home out in Eden Prairie, Minnesota, his off season home, and spend some time with him. And I had asked him at that point, you know, hey, are you ever interested in doing a book? And he said, no. He said, I'm never doing a book. I'm like, you're kidding. And I said, why? And he goes, just, it's not me, you know, because he's a private individual. Mm-hmm. Man. I'm like, okay. So now fast forward to where I'm working on the Say Owl book. And every now and then I would get a call from Larry and he would say, how's it going? And I would tell him some of the things that were going on with the book. And there were a couple of things that were really sensitive. Mm-hmm. And he asked me, he said, are you going to write that? And I said, no. And he said, why not? And I said, well, because Junior's not here to defend himself or to answer about it.
Right.
And the other thing is his family doesn't know this. And it would be unfair of me to put that out there in that way. So, you know, anyway, we have the conversations, we move on. One day out of the blue, I get a call from a book agent and he says, hey, Larry's doing a book and he wants you to do his book. And I said, well, wait a minute. Larry told me he's never doing a book.
Yeah.
So I said, let me call and ask him. And so I called him and he said, yeah, you know, he's going to do one and he wanted me to do it. And so right away, my mind went back to when I was writing the Junior book and Larry would call and ask me questions. In some ways, I feel like I was being, you know, kind of screened or vetted. Mm-hmm. And I think he felt he could trust me that I wasn't going to just take something he told me and make it salacious just for the sake of headlines and selling books. And that we could be honest with each other in the process. And we were. And am I disappointed that the book's not coming out? Absolutely, because there's some stuff in there that for me would really help people understand who Larry is and what he's about.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully one day we'll get to the point where he's ready to put it out. But that's how it all came about.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. I guess trust is key. Like we've talked to other, you know, men in sports and they always tell us, you know, trust is key. So I think that's great.
Yeah.
No question. I think a lesson for young journalists is that we get so caught up in today's business about breaking news. And we want to get the story out there and be first and this sort of thing. And that's all fine. But the problem is there's a time and a place. And if you get a reputation among players, and it is a small world, even though it seems big, it is a small world. If you get a reputation among these folks that you can't be trusted, or that you're not someone who can be counted on to have integrity, you'll get a few stories, but you won't get as many as you might otherwise get. And that's why I say, you know, always play the long game, not the short game, and you'll be okay.
Yeah, and it's about the opportunities, like Jacqueline was saying. I mean, we talked to your colleague, Steve Weish, of course, and he was saying sort of the same thing. It's about the relationships and the trust. Even with Chris Haynes, when he first started, we talked to him, the basketball reporter, and him starting. To stay on this topic, Jim, is that really mainly what it's about in terms of advice to young journalists, aspiring journalists like Jacqueline and I? Is it really just about, you know, looking for the long road ahead and building those relationships?
Well, it's about the foundation is always hard work and preparation. And for instance, even this interview, you can tell you guys have done your homework. So there are some who will come into an interview cold. And they will ask you things that you feel that they should know before they ever even start the interview. Right. So there's no substitute for hard work and preparation. As mm-hmm. Russell Wilson always says, the separation's in the preparation.
Right.
So you guys have nailed that. And then the other thing is, it's about your integrity. It's about the relationships that you form. And they take time. They don't happen overnight. And I think some folks try and rush it. And these players are smarter than I think people give them credit for. And they're always watching, even when you don't think they're watching. And it's not just them, it's coaches, it's owners, it's executives, all of that. So no question, how you go about doing your job is as important as what you do. And trust is at the core of everything, you know, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, thank you for that. I do want to just talk quickly about growing up, because I couldn't really find anything. Were you an athlete growing up? Like, what was your dream job? Was this the dream? Did you want to play in the NFL?
Oh God, I would have loved to have played in the NFL. Mm-hmm. You know, I grew up, man, you know, it's a typical story, but it's a, you know, it's my story. You know, we grew up, you know, single parent household, not much money, you know, rent hopping from year to year, moving all the time, all that kind of stuff. Parents didn't graduate high school. So I was the first in my family to go to college, and always knew that I wanted something better. You know, I still remember to this day going to a store with they call it something different now, but back in the day it was food stamps. It was public assistance. Mm-hmm. And how embarrassed I felt, you know, standing there and feeling that people were almost looking down on me. And just knowing that when I got older, it was something I never wanted to experience again. And I was going to work to make sure that didn't happen. So, you know, stories like that. But I loved football, but I also knew I was never going to be good enough to play professionally. So even though when I finished high school, there were some small schools that came asking if I would play, it was like, no, I want to go get my education and start preparing myself for something better. And even in high school, I wanted to write and that sort of thing, but I couldn't because of the conflict of interest. I'd have to write about my friends or teams that I was on, and there's no way to do that. Mm-hmm. So when I left and went to college, right away I knew what I wanted to do, and that's the road that I pursued. And fortunately, it's been good for me.
Yeah, it has been. That's great.
Yeah, no, that's great, Jim Trotter. Did you have one more question here? Because I think we don't want to hold you up for too long here, Jim. If you had one more,
you're good.
Yeah, I guess to end this off, we don't want to keep you on here too long. I for sure can keep you on here for like 2 hours. I got tons of questions always.
That's all good.
I do want to ask, which NFL player would you love to have on your podcast who you have not had yet, and who and why?
Oh, great question. There just are so many. Mm-hmm. Like, I love Ronnie Lott, and we talk, you know, I don't want to say regularly, but there are times we talk, but I've never had him on the podcast.
We just had a few weeks ago. We did.
You had Ronnie on?
We had Ronnie on, yeah.
That's awesome. Congrats to you. Man.
Thank you.
Ronnie's the best. I'm a San Francisco native. I was born in San Francisco.
Right, so of course.
I love everything about the way that he played. He played the game the way that I feel it should be played. He was violent. He was physical.
Very, very scary.
No nonsense. Yeah, I loved watching Ronnie play. But he's one that you know, maybe now we'll go ahead and get him on. Trying to think who else, being a Bay Area native, like, you know, mm-hmm. I love both the Raiders and the Niners. So I could go back in time, you know, the late Kenny Stabler would have been great.
Yeah.
To have on, even Cliff Branch, the late Cliff Branch, these guys mm-hmm. that I grew up with who aren't there anymore, the characters of the NFL. Sometimes I don't know if I'm a contrarian by heart or not, but I get bored with everyone who looks the same, speaks the same, and has the same message. Mm-hmm. So that was one of the things I loved about the Raiders back in the day, the Al Davis days and whatnot, is that they were mavericks and they didn't care. They wanted to be different from everyone else. And I love that about them. So there are stories there that they could tell. But I think I'm going to preface this by saying, am I getting the real person or am I getting the guy who's going to give me all the political, mm-hmm. you know, I'm conscious that people are listening, that sort of thing. I think if Tom Brady were to sit down and give you an honest interview, knowing some of the things I've heard from some of his teammates in private, it could be a phenomenal interview.
Right.
Things like that, guys like that. Because there are some stories out there, I'm telling you. And you guys, as you get older and go through this business, you'll learn. Reporters never write everything they know, because if they did, no one would talk to them.
Yeah.
Right.
But some of these stories are incredible.
I'm sure, yeah.
And if these guys were ever to sit down and just tell them, it would be fascinating.
It would kind of be like that Oprah Meghan Markle conversation kind of thing, like everything exposed and all that. Yeah, that would be great to have, you know, absolutely, you and Brady even just learn everything about him, that there's a lot of secrets about him that we are not too sure about yet. That's great. So thank you again for coming on once again. Thank you so much, Jim. Everyone go follow him on Twitter at JimTrotter_NFL. And make sure to go check out his podcast, Huddle and Flow, along with Steve Weish. Thank you so much, Jim.
Thanks,
Jim. No, thank you. I'm impressed by you guys. You guys got Ronnie Lott. That's major, boy. That is major.
It was
major.
Good. Thank you. No, it's been very exciting. We've been getting guests, you know, like you, like Steve, reporters, athletes, former players. It's been very, very fun. So thank you.
I love it. Keep it up.
We appreciate it.
We appreciate that. And we know you're super busy, Jim.
Yeah.
Like you said off air at the beginning, so much, everything always going on. So we appreciate your time as always, Jim. So
my pleasure, guys. You guys have a good one.
You too. Thank you. Take care.
You're welcome.